This is Frontierland with Dr. Dean Allen.
Sustainable ecotourism has become an important aspect in luxury travel around the world, and it is no more vibrant today than in South Africa. This week on Frontierland, I speak to one of the pioneers of this movement here in the Eastern Cape. I had the privilege of interviewing Sarah Tompkins at Samara, her magnificent 70,000-acre private game reserve in the Great Karoo. Here she has made it her mission to transform former farmland into an area of true conservation, consisting of 5 biospheres and over 60 mammal species, including Cape Mountain zebra, rhino, buffalo, lion and cheetah. Furthermore, Sarah is working with local communities and stakeholders, as well as national and international partners, to create one of South Africa's largest protective areas that will one day, she hopes, witness again the natural migration of animals across this region. When you hear her speak, you will have every confidence she will achieve her goals. Enjoy. Sarah, what a delight it is for me to be back in the Karoo. It's a special place for me, given my writings about Mikiesfontein, but it's one of the first places I fell in love with South Africa because of the endless skies, the space. There's something about the light of the Karoo, but I'm at Samara, a place I've heard about during the course of my studies, ever since I've moved to the Eastern Cape, and it's wonderful to be here. And you're an inspiration because you're a pioneer in what you've done here. But before we go any further, can you tell me your idea of conservation, what it means to you, that actual word, and why it's so important?
Well, conservation, I think, is probably one of the most important words on the planet today, because we sit at a critical juncture. So the preservation of biodiversity is something that is incredibly important for people on the planet, for the animals, for all of us. I mean, we live on a planet. We're living at the moment, basically, where we're utilizing 1.6 planets, and we only have one planet left. So conservation, really, to me, is the preservation of what previously existed. What we're talking about and what we're doing here at Samara is rewilding and recreating ecosystems and restoring degraded areas and also extirpated species, trying to bring it back to what it once was 300 years ago. So I think that conservation is a funny term and one that we use as part of our vocabulary.
Tell me a little bit about this journey, Samara. How did it come about? What was your inspiration? You've talked about the importance of conservation, but this has been a journey, hasn't it? I mean, we're now sitting in this most wonderful place. We're in this Karoo Lodge. I can feel the history around me. The environment is absolutely beautiful, but I'm sure it didn't always look like this. So tell me, how did it come about?
Well, for a start, I'm a South African. I was born in Joburg, and so I used to drive through the Karoo. And I remember as a child, we used to drive for miles and miles and miles. And at that stage, you know, all there were a couple of bookies and not much else. And we didn't really value the Karoo, certainly as children. But as I became an adult and got married and had children, had always loved going down to the Kruger area of South Africa, we started to look for a property where we could have, as a family home, bring our children to, when they were still quite small, to help them recognize and value wildlife, wild spaces, grow up in nature, because I think it totally and completely changes the dynamic of a human being when you spend time in nature. So we wanted our children to do that, and I think that, you know, it really has stood them in good stead. But we had no idea what we were doing, absolutely none whatsoever. And it was simply by chance we met somebody sitting around a dinner table after a couple of good glasses of Cabernet Sauvignon, a man called James McNaughton, who's well known in the region. And he said, "I've got a farm for sale." And he started to tell us the most incredible stories, these mystical tales of what existed in the Karoo, in the Eastern Cape, this Eastern Cape that, you know, everybody sort of had ignored, or certainly had ignored when I was growing up as a child, as a big game and wildlife area. And he got us so excited that we drove up a couple of months later from, we had a house on the coast, and I remember driving up and arriving in Graaff-Reinet, and I said to my husband, if he thinks we're buying one square inch of land, he can think again, because I now remember the Karoo. It's absolutely dry, dusty, and there's not much there. However, the next day was of azure blue skies, beautiful Bougainvillea in Graaff-Reinet, which is South Africa's fourth oldest town. And we headed off, and as we headed off the main road, off the track, we headed into these valleys, these mountains, the splendor of the beauty. We were just struck by the majesty of the mountains, by the vegetation that existed, the rivers, it was the wildlife that occurred still here, you know, the kudus and dacas and steenbok and tortoises and reptiles. And we fell in love. Totally and completely. So we just fell head over heels in love, and all of my friends thought I had total rocks in my head and said, how on earth can you buy land in the Karoo? And now everybody queues up to come back.
Amazing story. You mentioned Graaff-Reinet, of course. We're very close to, that's probably your nearest town. As a historian, it fascinates me. As you said, one of South Africa's oldest towns. And you were telling me earlier, I mean, people have farmed this area. It's been used for agricultural use since the late 1700s.
Yes.
But wasn't that one of your main challenges, to actually change the use of the land? And inadvertently or directly, you've changed the appearance of the land. And so you're making history in many respects yourself now.
Well, I suppose you could say that. I think for many years we were regarded as interlopers and the pariahs of the region, because we were coming and driving land use change, as you say. It felt to us it was the right thing to do. We consulted scientists like Professor Graham Curley, Andre Boshoff, who is sadly no longer with us, Michael Knight, Angela Gaylard, some extraordinary human beings who advised us and helped us craft what we wanted to put together, which is a large enough area that could hold the big five, basically, and reintroduce all of the species in some way that previously occurred in this region. It's not for the faint-hearted when you do that. There are an enormous number of challenges, obviously. Farmers didn't realize in 2003, when we wanted to bring the first cheetah back, why on earth, they said, the cheetah have been absent from the landscape for 130 years. Why on earth would you want to bring a cheetah back? When we brought back lion after 180 years, again, there was massive, massive resistance to this from all of our neighbors around, and one in particular who stopped us getting lion for a good few years, held us up. And as you will know, having lion and having big five on the property and all of those historically occurred here is fantastic for tourism, which means, again, we can employ more people, more people come to the region. And that's very much, you know, how we see ourselves. We see ourselves as the custodians of this land, but also as the voice, I suppose, or the mouthpiece of what can be done in a region that was in certain places devastated by small stock farming.
No. What you've done is incredible. We can see the results now around us. We spent the most wonderful evening last night and this morning on a game drive. And for me, it was the landscape that really inspired me. The open space that often you don't appreciate on game drives. But for me, I can see that the land is almost breathing again. It's coming back to life, and these incredible species that you've introduced. I believe Adrian Gardner of Shamwari was an inspiration to you in terms of how he led this kind of commercial aspect of wildlife tourism in the Eastern Cape and set the standards. And wasn't Adrian behind the decision to bring lion here?
Well, absolutely. I mean, we could not have done what we've done at Samara without Adrian having done what he did at Chamwari. And he was an absolute inspiration because he was very brave, and in his own way, he had to pioneer bringing back lion, in particular lion, back to the Eastern Cape. And he, I remember he came to stay with us with Dr. Ian Player, and we had such a wonderful trip, and we would go out in the mornings, particularly with Ian, and listen to the early morning calls of the beautiful birds, the Buk Mikiris and other wonderful birds that, that we have here. And then we would sit around a fire in the evening, and Adrian just said to me, "Put them all back." So he really was, he was a huge inspiration. And again, Adrian is the person, not only did he pioneer the idea, but he also took it out to, as I mentioned to you, he went around the world seeing tour operators and travel agents and, you know, basically pounding the pavements, promoting the Eastern Cape as a destination, because prior to that, nobody had ever thought of it as a wildlife area. And little did people realize, and little do they realize, that in fact, certainly this Karoo region of the Eastern Cape was one of the, it had the massive springbok migrations. And if you read some of the historical accounts, they say that you couldn't see for the dust for 2 weeks when the migrations went through Graaffreinet. The Cape lion, which sadly is now extinct, was a massive lion that's a put the fear of God into everybody that travelled on their wagons through this region in those early days. The quagga that is also sadly now extinct. And yes, so it's the Eastern Cape is an area, as you know, of outstanding natural beauty. It has a variety. It's got the oceans. It's got the mountains. It's got the vast plains and semi-arid areas. And so it's worthy of being on the tourism map.
No, without a doubt. I'm certainly a convert. It's going to take a lot for me to leave the Eastern Cape. For me, it's one of the most special places in terms of its culture, its heritage, its history, but also, as you said, its nature in South Africa, if not the world, actually. We've mentioned Adrian being a pioneer, but if I may say, you're a pioneer as well. How has it been being a female in this world in terms of conservation and leading what you've done here at Samara? It's a family effort, I know. I mean, your dear husband and your family are behind you, but you really have led the way here. And has being a woman been an advantage or a disadvantage at times?
That's an interesting question. And one that I can answer in two ways. Sometimes it's an advantage being a woman, because you know you can use charm to influence certain things. But it's also been very difficult because don't forget this is very much the domain of men, and in particular in this region. I think I've got to be careful what I say, but women were meant to have their place and really not put their heads above the parapet and be counted. But I'm afraid my middle name is Perseverance, I think, and I don't take no for an answer. So I'm just one of those people on the planet that always sees the glass half full. And I realize how, as a woman, how difficult it is sometimes to get your point of view across. So what we try and do at Samara as well is promote women, make sure that women have feel celebrated and cherished in this environment. And we have a very strong force of women here in the tourism industry. And they are the face of Samara, along with our wonderful men too. But it hasn't always been easy.
Well, that comes across, the welcome you receive here, but it's authentic. And I know you engage with the local communities in terms of your employees and what you do. You've got an incredible outreach program as well, and we'll talk a little bit about that if I may. But going back to yourself, we over dinner last night, I was absolutely enamoured and intrigued by your upbringing, and your parents in particular, both with incredible stories, both amazing people in their own right. Can you just tell me a little bit about them and how they influenced you?
Yes, yeah, so they were both extraordinary people. My father is still alive. He's 92. He was born in Aidutwa in the Transkei, and into a very humble family, and didn't have the money, but had a huge amount of talent. Didn't have the money to go to university, but he had an enormous amount of talent, particularly in the sporting arena. So he actually peeled potatoes to get to Wimbledon, and he was something of a celebrity when he arrived there, and he played on that circuit in the days when they were simply amateurs, and he became very successful as a sportsman and was a Springbok tennis player, but he realized that he would never be number one in the world, so he turned his attention to promoting sport, and his tournament at Ellis Park in Johannesburg was after Wimbledon, he had the second highest attendance in the world, which is quite extraordinary. So he was a bit of a marketing guru. He also did things like bring very famous film stars to South Africa. He created a ladies' day and boxes and hospitality tents. And he also both of my parents were hugely involved in the first initial stages of the Progressive Federal Party in South Africa, and worked for Helen Suzman, and so we were deeply involved in politics, and my parents absolutely loathed the regime that existed then, and so Dad had he ignored the laws of the day, and he had interracial stance, he had mixed race stance, and he just said, we're living in a country with this terrible inequity, and so he also brought Arthur Ashe to South Africa, who was again such a gentleman, amazing human being. And my mother was from a sort of very patrician family who had grown up in KwaZulu-Natal, and they'd actually founded the town of Richmond, and my great-grandfather was a and great-great-grandfather were in the timber industry, and then moved into up to Johannesburg, and were the sort of scions of the original days in Johannesburg, and sort of very privileged in a way, and lived in beautiful houses in Westcliff. And then my grandfather was a Rhodes Scholar and was at Oxford when the First World War broke out, and fought in the Royal Berkshires and got an MC in bar, and then taught at Harrow and the Dragon School, came back to South Africa, and he was an only child, and his grandfather bought for him a 60 acres of Westcliff, which has become and he created something called the Ridge Preparatory School, which is still in existence today, and basically he gave that land to the school in perpetuity. So I think from sort of my mother's side, I had that type of upbringing, and in a way both of my parents influenced different parts of my character. My father, in a way, I suppose, the sort of the go-getting marketing side, and my mother, this deep need to sort of give something back and to do things for communities. I mean, my mother created something called the South African Music Education Trust, and she felt that in order to heal divides in the post-apartheid, after 94, it was very important to take police brass bands into Mamelodi and other townships just north of Pretoria, so that she could try and help heal the wounds of apartheid and use music in order to do so. She also created something called Violence for Africa, and Yehudi Menuhin was one of her patrons. So I've got, yes, I suppose I really am the product of two lovely, really good people, and both my parents, my mother's sadly no longer around, but I held them in high regard.
And I'm sure they both would hold you in high regard for what you've achieved here, because they've left a legacy, they impacted people, and you've certainly done that. And you mentioned community. Can you just explain to us a little about what you do in terms of engaging with the community? Because it's all about your conservation is not purely for our natural world, it's also for, well, the natural world, including human beings, of course, but the communities are so important to you.
Hugely important. For us, in fact, the eradication of poverty forms the baseline of everything that we do here, because we will not be able to protect these landscapes for the millennia without having people as really profiting as part of that endeavour. People have to feel that they are not just part of it. There's an education process that has to take place too, and we firmly believe in upskilling and I've lost my train of thought. I just want to say something else that with the communities that we work with, for us it's a very inclusive feeling. It's a very deep rooted feeling of we could not do what we want to do without having massive community involvement, without having community buy-in. And it's not a case of, somebody said to me the other day, it's not a case of like taking a suite and throwing it across a fence. It's total and complete buy-in. How do we leverage off creating and empowering local communities to profit in landscapes going forward? Because that's the only way that we're going to protect them.
Indeed. You're involved with some amazing initiatives, you explained to me. One called The Long Run, which I think is a wonderful name for what you're trying to achieve, where you bring groups of like-minded people, world experts, you all pool your talents to have this vision. What is your particular vision for this part of South Africa? I understand that there is this movement to rewild not only this area that we're sitting in of the Karoo, but actually to link it to other reserves and other properties that are currently privately owned for the greater good of the planet. But can you elaborate on what you're trying to do?
And this is by no means our idea. This is we can't claim any form of ownership. It is an idea that was driven by scientists that we've met and conservationists that we've met over the years, who recognise this huge need to mitigate against an extinction debt, and in order to do so, you have to put together vast tracts of land. Now, this region is really unusual. Between Graafrenet, the Kam de Boer National Park, Craddock, which has the Mountain Zebra National Park, and around Kabega, which has the Addo Elephant National Park, you've got almost 4 million acres of land. And our dream, and at this point it's still very much a dream, but would be to try and create enough space for not only wildlife to thrive in areas without fences, but also for communities in all of that surrounding area, in those surrounding areas, to thrive as well.
Well, given what you've achieved here, I won't put that upon beyond you. There's no doubt that that is achievable, and you and your colleagues are the right people to drive this. As a conservationist, as a humanist, I can see you are a glass half full person. You are positive. Despite all the challenges we've got, we will be okay going forward, do you believe?
You have to have hope. I believe that life without hope is so full of despair. It's almost, I wouldn't be able to contemplate what it would be like. I do believe that we need to change our buying patterns and habits. I do believe, I'm appalled at the amount of plastic that we all use. As being members of The Long Run, we subscribe to what we call the four C's, which is culture, commerce, community and conservation, and they've helped us develop a 5- and 10-year plan as to how we will meet our set of objectives that have been decided upon with the people who actually work for The Long Run, who are some pretty extraordinary people, and it's a wonderful community. But I think how many handbags do we need? How many pairs of shoes do we need? If all of us just were able to recycle in some way, particularly plastic, and send it to an environment where there's some amazing initiatives. There's a lady in Graafrenet who turns it into handbags and little purses, and another initiative I've heard of in Cape Town that turn it into bricks for the building industry. So I think all of us just have to look at our own environment and say, whether it's 1 meter or 1 acre at a time, we all have a sphere of influence and we have a duty to do something about the planet.
I certainly agree. Frontier Land is all about hope. It's all about positivity. It's all about sharing special human stories. And if I may say so, Sarah, your story is very special, and I think we'll warrant a few more episodes looking, even if it's looking at the careers of your parents. But I'd love to come back, and I believe that in 5 years' time you will have met a lot of those objectives that you set yourself. But can I just say all strength to you and what you do and your family.
Well, thank you very much indeed. It's been a pleasure having you up here. And I would just like to say too, is that on the planet today, and it's always been like this, collaboration is key. We cannot do things without other people. And I think that will be the key to our success going forward.
Hear, hear. Thank you very much for your time.
Thanks so much.
That was Frontierland with Dr. Dean Allen. For more podcasts, visit algoafm.co.za.